Welcome back to another Sick Career Podcast. I'm really excited to have on this podcast a former Googler, former managing director on the sales team, Jay Bowden. And he had an illustrious career at Google for north of 16 years. He's got promoted multiple times. He has risen in the ranks, and he also unfortunately got impacted by the layoffs in 2023. That being said, he has taken that in a positive light and dedicated his life and time to coaching and growing people, leveraging a lot of the experiences that he has gone through at his time at Google and elsewhere, leadership lessons that he's learned from great leaders. You'll hear some great tips in this episode, a couple of ones that I am most intrigued with and learned a lot about here are two takeaways. One is Jay will talk about the concept of stay and go. So if you're in a difficult situation, how you simultaneously manage kicking ass in your current role while you are dipping your feet in other opportunities so you can get an exit plan for yourself. And secondly, he talks about the importance of understanding who your adversaries are and how to deal with those adversaries within the work environment, and we all have our adversaries. And if you ever need help with your career, if you're looking for a better job quickly, confidently, and with lots more money, that's what we do best at Kadima Careers, and we have three ways to help you. One, we work with a limited number of people with personalized coaching. You do need to apply for this program, and we will work with you until you get a better job. Then we will help you negotiate that offer. Then we will help you in those first 90 days. That is our personalized coaching program. Secondly, we have group coaching. You don't have as much access to me. It's a 6-month program. You get some negotiation services. We don't cover it fully. But if you like learning in more of a group setting, we do have group coaching. And finally, if you are more of a do-it-yourself person, can digest videos, scripts, documents, worksheets, and so forth, and do it yourself, we have a digital course called the Job Acquisition Method, and all of our products and solutions always come with a 30-day money-back guarantee because we have that much faith and confidence that it will accelerate your career. So with that, enjoy this podcast with Jay, and the last three words I'll leave you with before we launch into this podcast are own your career. Hello and welcome to another episode of the Sick Career Podcast. I'm really pleased to have former Googler, or as we call it, Zoogler, on the podcast today, Jay Bowden. And he just made a hand signal from me with a bow to give me a reminder to pronounce his name properly. So listeners out there can remember that as well. Jay has had a very impressive career in sales leadership at Google. Been there for north of 16 years, left there in January of last year. We'll talk a little bit about that. Now he has founded Jaybird Unlimited, where he is offering coaching support for leaders to grow and develop their career. So with that, I'm going to hand it over to Jay, who can do a much better job of introducing himself. Jay, take it away.
Thank you very much. I think that was perfect. All I would add, Alan, and the good news, honestly, for my purpose at Google was I had a career for 19 years prior to Google in the radio advertising business. In college, I had 3 internships, an ad agency, a radio station, and a newspaper. And of the 3, the radio employees were having a lot more fun. They were driving nicer cars. And there was a freedom that I could feel that I knew for being a self-starter was going to be a good fit. Through 19 years, starting in Tampa, Florida, went to Atlanta. And then ultimately in 06, the same month that Google bought YouTube, Google got into the radio business. So I had a friend that had gone to Google. And by the way, then Google wasn't a household name. It was 06. But ultimately he said, hey, if a recruiter called you, would you talk to him? And the rest is history. But I was lucky. I call it the side door that I came into Google on the Google audio team. And then that parlayed when they got out of the radio business. I got to be on the retail big box team in Atlanta, Georgia, a smaller office for Google. And over time, got to move myself and my family out to California, which was an early dream of mine.
Awesome. And you joined Google in 2006, as you alluded to. I believe Google was founded in 1998. So you were 8 years into the journey of Google. And then you were there for another 16, 17 years. We're not going to go so much into Google, but I do want to hear your perspective of how was it to join then as an 8-year-old company, and how did it evolve over the course of time, and how did that enable you to grow your career as Google grew?
Yeah, you've used the word grow multiple times in that sentence, and that's what that company did. From the day I started, it was search only. Candidly, it was the best search engine on the market. My line was that there was the carpet was worn at the fax machine where the orders were coming in. And I say that because fax machines were a thing then. And I'm being facetious, but it was a one-trick pony. That trick was really good. Over time, they bought DoubleClick, right? They bought YouTube the same month, as I mentioned, back when $1.6 billion was a lot of money. And ultimately, as a sales org, sales became a good word, but in the day, it was a bit of a bad word. Larry and Sergey, very much product-driven and give the users and do no evil and those things. But then sales and the other side where the things were getting monetized, I would say not many people at the company at that point were really true salespeople. And I had just finished 19 years of direct sales. My mom would tell you I was born a, quote, salesperson. And I think what she meant was just my ability to build relationships with people and come to some common ground and make people feel comfortable, not like the hardcore, if you will, like salesperson. So the growth over time, Alan, was great. I got to move to California. I got to move into a director role. Ultimately, a few years later, I got to move into a managing director role. So it's a verticalized sales organization, right? Large customer sales was the portion of the business that I got to work in. And they trusted me with very large businesses, very big customers that had high expectations of the partnership that we would grow beyond purely search, even display and video. But then how do we partner better with cloud? How do we partner with your partnerships team? Can we do some matched marketing with Google as a brand? So the role was pretty expansive. They gave me so much training. I learned so much. I do not have an MBA. I do not have a PhD. But 16 years at that company during, you could argue, one of its greatest rises in its history, I got to learn a lot.
Yeah, I sure did. And I know you're someone who always believes in coaching. I know that's what you're doing now. But I think something that you often allude to is like always be coached or always get coaching. You were there for 16 and a half years. You were also there before. Are there some key elements of coaching that you received either at Google, independently, or elsewhere that has really helped enable you to accelerate your career? You had 16 and a half years there. You got promoted how many times?
One, two, three.
Three times?
Three. Yep.
Three times. And you left as an MD, which is like a managing director, which is level 9 at Google, if they still have the levels the same as when I was there. So what's some coaching advice that you've received either at Google, before Google? And I know you are a student of the game that you do now. So what's some great pieces of advice that have really accelerated your career?
Yeah, thank you. My first executive coach, fortunately, again, being invested in by Google, was a woman named Jeannie Faye Snow. She was an internal coach at Google. I had just been promoted to director and I was struggling. Honestly, I'd never managed managers, never had a portfolio as large as it was. Again, didn't have an MBA, a PhD. And I was fortunately given the opportunity to take on that role. And I needed to solve some of my own and answer some of my own questions. Jeannie did a great job of not giving me the answers, but helping me find them myself. And sometimes we'd leave the room. Like she'd leave the session and she'd say, bye, see you next time. With unanswered questions, that was my homework. So I liked that because I had to dig deeper. Then I was the author of the answer, by the way. I wasn't using someone else's playbook. There's no cheating in leadership. You are who you are. And for me to feel confident in who I was, not feel like an imposter, the imposter syndrome at any level, at any age in life, I do believe is a real thing. And when you're surrounded by A-plus students, all the trades talk about how they only hire the best and the brightest. And I'm in that org, really finding my voice took me a little bit of time. So I would say open-ended questions, that uncomfortable silence.
What? Come on, say something.
That uncomfortable silence. I'm a talker. I was paid to talk my whole life, right? So for me, learning to listen, unlearning talking, and then having to have my own answer. I call it a pointy point of view. And I think especially with the work that you do at Kadima, to think about people being a peanut butter human being where you're trying to be everything to everybody, or you just like wear all these different, right? Versus having a pointy point of view and being who we are, saying what we think and feeling comfortable that there won't be a repercussion. You won't be laughed at. You won't be not promoted. Things like that in a world that is wound pretty tight, I found to be the exception. And coaching helped me find my voice. It helped me, what I say, be myself sooner and quit being who I thought people wanted me to be. Well, and I look back, I was at Cox Enterprises years and years ago in the radio business. I was up for this role and they said, we're just going to have you take this little personality test. And I was so nervous. And I answered every question of that test thinking about what they wanted the answer to be.
So this was a test they gave you at Cox to get promoted to see if you're worthy of promotion?
Imagine it's a Strengths Finder. I bet it was Strengths Finder, honestly. Yeah. It was like 80 questions on a spectrum, and it sounds like me, doesn't sound like me. One of those. And I don't even remember the name of it. I remember the day, and it was so uncomfortable. And fast forward to today, when I take Discovery Insights or Strengths Finder, which are PQ, right? When I answer these questions, the advice I give in the life I live is to answer the first thought you have. That's typically who you are. So for me to start saying what I thought in big groups full of, to your point, managing directors, vice presidents, et cetera, that's what coaching helped me. And that's what made me think, I want to help people be themselves sooner. I want people to feel confident enough to raise their hand in a meeting versus doing some of the things I did early on, like staring at the clock, hoping the meeting was going to end and I wouldn't get asked a tough question.
And you talk a little bit about different levels of people that you were working with. And I know this is a subject that you are passionate about, managing up, managing down, managing lateral. Talk about what the differences are of those three, because all throughout your career, you were never the head of Google. You became manager, director, but there were still several levels between you and Sundar, or you and Larry, or you and Eric, which is last, Eric Schmidt. You lasted through four CEOs. It's probably Larry, Eric, Larry, and Sundar. But what are some of the differences that you've learned, made mistakes on, of the differences of how you manage up, down, and across? And then first, let's talk about the differences, and we'll talk about the similarities.
Great. I don't know that the differences are great if you're an authentic human being and you're transparent, and words that, you know, we all use a lot more today in leadership. But if you go back 50, 80 years, those leaders were none of those things, right? They were supposed to be perfect. They never shared that they were having a good or a bad day. They put on a face, right? And that was the company line and those types of things. So sadly, workers, I think, weren't able to really share their voices, be authentic, be transparent over time, especially a culture like Google. They welcomed that. They wanted us to have a voice. So I would say when it comes to managing up, be tight, have your point of view that you really want to get across. One of the leaders I worked with, I loved the one-on-one doc that we would use because it was subcategorized customers, strategy, operations, and product. And so I knew that's what they wanted. When you're managing up, give them what they want, right, in their order. And don't come to that meeting with a lot of, I used to fill that one-on-one doc. Look how busy I am. Look how much I'm doing. Over time, I learned, go, all the things that are FYI, just want you to know, because I'm a leader here. I'm doing these things. I have one or two questions for you, things that I'd like to troubleshoot together. So I love a leader that will get that whiteboard out, and I can picture it right now, one of them, man, big whiteboard. We used it a ton. He helped me really think through some of the challenges of the business. Never gave me the answers. I walked out of that office, but I felt excited. From a peer and lateral perspective, to your point, the way I think about it is the peers are really the only place you can truly be comfortable. There's no power in that relationship. I mean, you're all vying for a promotion maybe, or a better rating, right, than the other. But when you're managing up, the camera's always on. And that's a line I don't love, but it's true. And so when that you push play on that camera, you push join, be what you want to be, show up as you want to show up with your peers. And we called it pinging at Google, right? Remember the Google chat, right? And yeah. I had my, you know, my ping buddies, people that we'd be like, I'm not sure I understand this, or why are we doing this? Or we could really be confident with each other and that we were at the same level. Managing down, you can say it that way, but the way I think about it is being authentic, having the good and the bad days. A lot of people struggle. They don't even open a one-on-one with, how was your weekend? How are you? The manager, one of the first one-on-ones I had when I became a director, what I loved so much about it was he came into that meeting with a diary, if you will, always used the same one, and just said, tell me a bit about you. That turned into 60 minutes. My life story, you know, literally born and raised in Florida, you know, did this. I liked music. I did that. And by the end, I went home and my wife said, how was that one-on-one? I said, it was great. Why was it great? We do like to be able to talk about ourselves. And as we go on in life itself and business, the higher you go, the less people ask and care about you. It becomes much more of a business relationship. If we can keep it real, I want to know the dog's name, the cat's name. I want to know what they're struggling with, that their mom has been going through that. I want to know them at that level. I do believe it builds trust and psychological safety. I share some of those things myself as well. So, quote, managing down, I say, be real. Don't lessen the expectation you have. Be really clear on the expectations of the relationship. but we can still be people.
You talk about psychological safety, and that was a term I first heard at Google. Google did some research on the topic with Amy Edmondson, a professor from Harvard Business School, and talked about that being one of the biggest attributes differentiating between a successful team an unsuccessful team, that a team that has psychological safety. Explain a little bit about what psychological safety is and how you try to encourage that on your teams.
And I think that's the Aristotle work, right? Ultimately, that was that research project that they did.
Yeah.
And I agree. So I think the things I just described are what create psychological safety, right? If I'm distanced from you, if I think I'm better than you, if I create kind of a chasm that I quote outrank you, or there's a power struggle. People aren't themselves. People are who they think I want them to be. Just like Jay Bowden was who I thought people wanted me to be earlier in my career, which is why I talk a lot about be yourself sooner. That's something I think coaching can really help with. So to your point, psychological safety means you can tell me, hey, I want to skip the one-on-one. I need to deal with something. My kid's sick. Hey, I want to skip the one-on-one because I got so much going on right now. I'm super busy. Here's a quick update. And know that I'll understand. It's not about keeping the one-on-one so we can say we did. It's about getting value from the one-on-one. In those relationships, Alan, over time, tears are shed. I managed through COVID. I led teams at a time when all of my ability to make personal connection in person, which is something that I enjoy and I believe I do well, was stripped away. So how to keep psychological safety in an organization when we were going, the line we used was we were all in the same storm, but we were in different boats. And I use my son as an example. I thought I was, quote, suffering through COVID at my home with my two puppies and living in Menlo Park, California. He was in a one bedroom in New York City. And he would send videos. There wasn't a single person on the street at noon. He was all alone. He had to stagger when he could even go to the little grocery store to get some food. He had no human connection. So I think being respectful that we're all different, and that's the beauty of being human. We're all different and we have a different background. And I mean diversity, meaning experience. It might be ethnicity. It could be religion, whatever it is. I believe culture add is better than culture fit. Culture fit is Jay Bowden hires people that look and sound like him. And I'm super comfortable and we probably don't generate near as many new ideas. And we probably do what I say. Culture add is where you bring in diverse perspectives, people from different backgrounds. We all fill each other's gaps, if you will. And together we make a team that I think can come up with greater ideas. You know, they used to say, Alan, like happy teams perform better. Okay. Happy people perform better. I don't like throwing performance into happiness because it sounds like we just want you to be happy so you'll perform better and the business will do better. I think that's the outcome of being happy. If we just focus on the be happy part, and happy means different things to different people. To an introvert, it means doing a video call. To an extrovert, it means having an offsite on site and having 50 people in the room and everybody feeling that vibe. Respecting people's differences, knowing that together a group of diverse thinkers can create, I believe, better ideas. And if people are happy because they feel invested in and psychologically safe, they'll bring more of themselves to work.
Have you ever, in your time at Google or elsewhere, have you had teams that you reported into or you're part of where they lack the psychological safety?
I've had both.
I've been there too. When you've been in the latter where the psychological safety does not exist, where you do not feel comfortable to voice your opinion, you do not feel comfortable to take risks, you don't feel comfortable to speak your mind. What did you do about that? Because some of the efforts that I did, I was combative and that did not help the situation. So you've had a more successful career than me. So I'd love to hear when you've dealt with those situations, how did you either manage through that or get out of that situation?
It's a great question. And to your point, like early teams, we still stay connected. We went through a time, we had our nickname, you make a nice little name for yourself, et cetera. I still keep in touch with those people. It was a time we look back at in fondness. Same thing through some of the work that I did out through California. And then I would say it gets super icky when there's no psychological safety because there's more air in the room because less people feel comfortable. You feel that. So then typically I find the leader that struggles to provide psychological safety, then they push harder. Why aren't people talking? Hey, what's going on out there? And that's when, by the way, we as a group start to talk to each other. Oh, wow.
Everyone's DMing themselves.
Everybody's DMing. Yeah, this is going the wrong way. And I would say to say how I solved it. At some point, if you're in that, I'll call it a toxic environment, you do have to play by that leader's rules, like it or not. Or I had a stay and a go plan. I had an executive coach at the time. Stay plan was crush my day job and figure that leader out and what I needed to do, what was important to them. And I always say that in my coaching, what your stakeholders care about, how do they roll? And then again, to that camera's always on piece. And I didn't do that very well. I've become so authentic. I can't be the other way. It just felt horrible. So that was the stay plan. The go plan was, okay, what am I going to do? Other roles maybe within the company, other roles outside of the company. And in my case, it was to start forming and do more coaching. I'd gone through the Hudson Coaching Institute. I knew that over time, that's something that I wanted to do. So I started investing more. The way my coach said it was, if you color coordinate your calendar by the different things you have to do in a week, which one is your favorite color? My favorite color ended up being the sessions when I was coaching or I was doing one-on-ones with my team, people that reported to me, and we could have the psychological safety, we could solve problems, we could have a great life together. So I think getting yourself out of that environment is key, and it's not as always easy as it sounds.
I like that concept of the stay and go plan. I have an idea of what it could mean, like in my mind, make sure you're doing what you need to do where you are now so you don't get your ass fired, and simultaneously work on building an exit plan for yourself, but maybe elaborate on that if I have missed anything there.
No, I think you nailed it. It's stay is crush your day job, right? Figure it out. And I was using my executive coach a lot to help me navigate this human being. What I like about executive coaches, well, we're all very different, right? Hudson believes like self as coach. So Jay Bowden and Alan Stein, we're going to be different coaches. We have a different background. We might believe in some different things. That coach at that time understood the personality that I was dealing with and really gave me some great ideas on how to create that band-aid, how to make that work, right? To your point, because I wanted to continue to be successful and my go plan was taking some time. The stay is crush your day job, find out what's important to your boss, deliver it. Performance does cure a lot of things. If the business is performing, your team's performing, there's no psychological safety. At least you have your numbers to point to. You have your hard work, right, to point to. That was the stay plan. The go plan was, let's start a list. Let's network. Network's the key, right? I believe when we're happily employed, we network less.
That's true. You right? Get comfortable.
Well, you're comfortable. And look at your calendar sometime. There's no room for networking when you're running a, you know, huge business with lots of people and all. And these environments, Google and many others, are now just meeting cultures. It's just so many meetings. So there's the prep for the meeting. There's the action items that came out of the meeting. I was working morning, noon, and night on that. So to find the time is really critical. Block your calendar in a way that the go plan gets some air.
Yeah.
Right?
And I'm looking back at your career at Google, 16 plus years there. Head of industry, or HOI, as we called it at Google, retail sector, industry director of tech B2B, then managing director of growth, home and consumer services. And you talk about this networking. How did you achieve that internal mobility? Those are three roles that are pointed out in your LinkedIn. You might have some additional ones. Mm-hmm. How did you move around these roles? Like, I'm assuming some of those times it was a stay and go situation. How did you successfully manage your mobility internal within Google, like balancing that comfort of the happiness of where you were, but also knowing that I need to stretch myself. I need these additional opportunities, or I need to avoid this toxic situation.
Yeah, great question. And I would say, I would imagine it to be true at many companies, Google being such a big chunk of my career and my life, right? That's the culture that I know, but nobody says no to a request for a 30-minute meeting. Let's say I'm a Mountain View employee. I'm going to be in New York. Hey, Alan, it's Jay. Been a while. You know, we used to work together in this. I'm going to be in your office. Can I get you a cup of coffee? 30 minutes. Love to hear what you're working on. Love to share what I'm working on and see if there's anything we could do for each other. Again, that in-person time, make that work. If it's a drink, if it's a coffee, if it's just a drive-by, I'm a connector. I'm a matchmaker. And I do it for others and I did it for myself. Staying social. If you called me, I don't know your name or whatever, you said, hey, I'm working for so-and-so. They mentioned you know something about this. Could I have 30 minutes? I never said no. And that was the culture. So I would say I stayed connected. I never said no to a LinkedIn invite either. If they were a client or they were at the company or somebody even a couple degrees away from 6 degrees of separation, sure. And so I think there's that openness to create relationships with people. I'm reading this book right now, so I'm a little bit into this one particular thing about like putting out positive energy magnetizes and attracts positive energy. Yeah, be a giver. I'm a giver. And when I do need something back, my vibe has built a relationship with others that they know I was there for them. They'll be there for me. Fast forward to the coaching piece. That has been so critical to the success that I've found at Jaybird Unlimited. It's because I believe I give off that energy. I attract what I give, and people have been so kind to me. So that's what I did while I was at Google. I would always say, if you're going to be in Chicago, New York, Europe, I'd go to Dublin. And instead of like meeting, because I ran an international growth team for a while, right? In the US, that's how we helped our customers find customers abroad. My son was studying abroad in Dublin for Thanksgiving. And another guy that I worked with had been to Dublin and said, those guys in Dublin do this international growth thing pretty well. If you had a minute. So the family went, we did Thanksgiving through the weekend. Everybody flew back but me. I stayed in the Dublin office Monday and Tuesday. I filled my calendar with meet and greets, and I met a bunch of great people that were very willing to share with me what they were doing. I brought it back to the US, and probably that was 10 years ago, we formed the international growth team with one part-time employee. And today it's probably 50 people plus. It's across all segments. It really helps US-based companies find customers abroad. It's a great business strategy for US businesses. And I got it all because I said to people, hey, you got a minute, I'm going to be in town. And they said yes.
That's great. And maybe some of that's manifestation of your positivity and your openness. And there are a lot of givers out there. I'm sure it wasn't 100% successful every time you reached out to people.
No.
How do you deal with it when you don't get a response or you don't get willingness to meet? Do you just move on? Do you persevere?
Move on.
They're more fish in the sea and you just...
Yep. Keep moving. Wasn't meant to be. Their energy isn't right. Their mind frame isn't right. We're probably not going to have a great conversation anyway.
Yep.
And bad for them. They didn't get to learn something or hear something that I might be doing, or let me introduce them to someone I know that actually could have been a thing.
Exactly. And Adam Grant talks about this a little bit in the book, Give and Take. I don't know if you've read that. There's givers, there's takers. But that's also the philosophy we use here at Kadima. We say, reach out to a lot of people. The people that respond back to you, there's probably selection bias that they are more giving people, they're more helpful people. And the people that don't respond to you, fuck them. They lost out on this opportunity to talk to me. Yeah. Or maybe they just never got your message. That's a possibility too. So you got to assume like maybe positive intent, but sometimes there will be people that just do not respond. I've written some notes to very senior leaders at companies and gotten responses. Often I didn't though. And then I just moved on. I wrote a note to Larry, actually, at one point, thanking him for the first year I was at Google. They used to give away the cell phones for everybody for the holiday gift. It was a really nice note. I took a lot of time to write it. I never got a reply. So be it. He's a busy guy.
But Alan, I think it goes back to culture. If you have a culture of givers, then the power of that is going to be grand. There was a person at Google way back in the beginning for me. I had them on a panel. They had come from a big company and somebody asked, hey, why'd you choose Google? And they said, because there were less assholes per thousand than the other companies I talked to. And I think over time that's held true.
Yeah. Like I've been at 21 companies and Google is still, it's not perfect. And like, we don't need to go into some of the horror stories, but that's definitely not perfect. No company is perfect. There's no dream company, no dream job, but there are probably less assholes per thousand at Google than at most companies.
Yep. I'll give you that.
You might have more hubris per thousand and cockiness there, but not necessarily assholes. People that are just very confident with their responses.
Yes.
So you moved up throughout your career. Have you ever hit bumps with moving up? So you got promoted twice at Google to very high levels, by the way. So people that are not familiar with Google, going from a 7 to an 8 to a director level is more pomp and circumstance, more critique around that, more sign-offs, and then 8 to 9. Like it gets progressively harder as you go up the narrower pyramid. I'm assuming you didn't get promoted every time you were up for promotion and you probably got...
That's a good assumption.
Talk about some of those setbacks and how you, like either one or a couple, and how you dealt with that when you were aiming for advancement. You thought you were kicking ass. You thought you had the support and the promotion, the money, the accolades didn't follow.
Beginning days as a director, when I was struggling and I had Jeannie Faye Snow as the coach that I talked about, right, were tough times. And my leader transitioned and I got a new one. And they came in asking a lot of tough questions. I didn't have all the answers. And if you remember the rating system at Google, the lowest rating was a needs improvement. And the highest rating at the time was superb. And there were only five of them. So there's that. Across my career, I had never had a needs improvement until I did. And it was that time. And I can remember meeting with this leader Friday afternoons late in this. It's funny, the conference room was called Voodoo Child. I'll never forget the name of it. The building that I was in at the Quad in Mountain View. And really harsh conversations, 30-minute one-on-one would go 2 hours sometimes. They were prepping me for this needs improvement that I was going to get. And they said, Jay, in the end, you're just too nice. Your team doesn't respect you. You're going to get a needs improvement. What scores did you give them? Nobody was getting a needs improvement below me. So I go home that night. I tell the story, of course, when I get home. I get up the next morning to go on a mountain bike ride with a fellow Googler in a different group. And I tell them the story as we're grinding up the hill. It's a 2,500 foot climb that we would do. And they said, I can't believe him. What an asshole. What a jerk. Da, 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 da. And I said, he's right. He's right. I don't hold them to the same accountability that he holds me to. The good news about him, Alan, was he believed I could be great. He really thought I was doing a lot of things right, but I needed to increase the accountability, set clearer expectations, and let my team do the work instead of me. So fast forward, if you remember how those ratings worked, they were every 6 months.
Yep.
The fun part, the nice ending of that story is, A, I love telling it that a director got a needs improvement. Teams that I would tell that story to, that's still their favorite slide. I showed my ratings over time and there was that big dip. 6 months later, exceeds expectations, which is the middle of the third score.
You went up like two scores.
I went up two scores of five. I went from needs improvement. I skipped consistently meets and I went to exceeds. 6 months later, I skipped strongly exceeds and got superb. So in 1 year's time, with really direct, candid feedback that honestly, I was almost 50. Nobody had ever said those words to me. I had been that way my whole career. So I give that person a ton of credit. We keep in touch. We still have lunches annually. And I realized I could own this. I could fix this. And I did. And that's where over time, the next level came, which to your point was managing director. And it was only from that feedback that I could have grown and gotten what I was. The alternative would have been, I got another one of those. I thought the guy was an asshole. I didn't take the advice and I probably would end up working somewhere else or nowhere else or whatever that was. So hearing the feedback, taking the personal hurt out of it, taking it and owning it, and then having them become my cheerleader because they saw the turnaround. And by the way, which boss doesn't love telling that story of the turnaround? Because there's some ego there.
Yeah. And what people may or may not be aware of, not just at Google, but every company I've been at, these ratings are distributed in some sort of normal distribution. And Google, I think, had like 5% of the needs improvement, 5% in the superb. And then it's like 20, 30, 50% or whatever the mix is. But it's a normal distribution, a bell curve. And it sounds like the feedback you were getting is you weren't distributing some needs improvement to your team. So you were coming into calibration, maybe you had 50 people that you were calibrating and you had zero people that you said needed improvement, even though the numbers should say that it was like 2 to 5 people you should be in there with, which is a very tough message for people to understand because everybody is measured on a curve. And especially at a Google or Microsoft or companies that hire a lot of top talent, everybody does think that they're A players. And there are a lot of A players, but you as a manager need to, and this actually hurt you by not being a little bit more tough on your team. It might not have been a fair rating, it needs improvement, but you had to pick who are the 5 or 10% of the people at the bottom of your 50 or 100 person org, whatever size that was.
And if we really look at this and think consistently meets expectations, let's use that. Is anybody really consistently meeting every single day? No. There's something everybody can do better. And we have
everyone needs improvement. I would always give myself an NI, like not for a rating because that would impact my compensation. But to myself, in my mind, I'm always asking people, how can I improve? What can I do better?
Yeah, I want to be better every day. And so the assumption is, yeah, I'm not perfect.
What other pieces of advice have served you well throughout your career? So I think that was a great example of you first hearing some tough feedback, maybe reacting really, really angrily, going up the hill with your buddy, taking a little time to unwind. I think my faults have been like to battle and not to let the emotion subside. But I think you did a better job of that. Some other good advice that you've either learned or given throughout your career, which has served you well or others well?
So one I like to share because I took myself way too seriously throughout my life, if I'm honest. I cared too much. So tough words to say, HR not necessarily supported, but care less. Don't focus on being perfect. Don't care so much you lose your work-life balance. Don't care so much that you're just always thinking of the things you're not doing. And then in the same theme, it's a game. Best advice I ever got. Same leader, boom. I had one of these fishbowl kind of offices. You know, it would open like that and come in. They'd close it behind me. And it'd say, I was off my numbers. We were having a bad quarter, right? I lived a quarterly lifestyle for 35 years, right? There was a quarter, there was a quota every quarter for my entire life, right? And they said, hey, it's a game. You're going to win some, you're going to lose some. Same message, care a little less. Don't get so tight when you're giving the bad message. You lost a game. You had a shitty quarter. You weren't prepared. Your pipeline wasn't full enough. You didn't have the right resources in place. Whatever that is, it's a game. Go get the next one. So for me, Alan, when I heard those words, it washed over me that it's a game. Are you kidding me right now? My whole life, I thought this was life and death. It really is. If you think of it like a game in a sport, it lowered my amount of worry of being perfect. The other thing I say, and I think it's more applicable in your world when we think about careers, et cetera, is, you know, everybody's vying for these roles and there's only one slot open and there's 32 people that want it. If you go in trying to be everything to everybody, you're not going to look like a particular, this is what you bring. I say have a pointy point of view, have something, whatever it is about that role you can crush. If that's what they're looking for, you're going to get the job. If it's not, thank goodness you didn't get the job. Because you don't have what they want anyways. You just faked your way through it. So careful what you ask for. Have a pointy point of view and be yourself. Let them see who you are. We come in sometimes so rigid. I would imagine, especially earlier in my career. Oh my goodness, when you push the join button and then I'm, hi, you know, be yourself. You know what you're doing. You bring a certain thing. Your brand is already known, right? Your prep is already there. People say, what's your brand? And I always say to people, ask three people close to you at work what your brand is. People that will tell you. If you don't like what you hear, change your brand. Change your brand. My brand was a salesperson. He's a salesperson. What is demanded at the director level is that you be a business leader, that you have enough strategy and operational rigor that you're not, quote, just customer friendly. You're not just a great in-person relationship builder. So I started to really lean into that when I would come into meetings. Instead of all of the niceties and things that I know I have, getting straight to the punchline, getting straight to the things that I also know how to do, made me a better rounded leader.
So I was looking at your LinkedIn profile before this interview, and I was like digging into that because people choose what words to use on their profile. And you said with Jay Bird, our mission is simple yet powerful, to ask thought-provoking questions to help you unravel the knots of key business challenges. What are some of those thought-provoking questions that you ask your clients or the people you coach, or any go-to thought-provoking questions that you ask people to help unlock things and unravel the knots, as you call it?
Sure. There are a number of them. It's funny, when you go through coaching certification, it's all about finding your killer questions. And we're writing them down and trying to cover these things. I would say in each circumstance, it's a little different. But first, what have you tried? How important is this challenge to the business's success? So putting into perspective, if you will, who are your adversaries? Who are your stakeholders? Oh, and your stakeholders, what do they care about? How do you bring people along? There's a lot of matrixed orgs, right? There's cross-functional folks that really have a big point in your success. If they don't want to help you be successful because you're helping them be successful, they're just not going to be as easy to play with, if you will. What have you tried that didn't work? What are two things you could experiment with between now and the next time we meet to show what maybe a little bit of this? Let's say you have an idea. Let's go back to the international growth team idea. I didn't form a team of 30 people and go at it. I literally had a job share, half of the job share. I said, hey, this is something I'm looking at. I saw on a slide one day that 72% of queries for my tech B2B customers were coming from outside of the United States. And I asked my analyst, I said, how much of our revenue is coming from outside the United States? They said 28%. So for me, the difference between 28 and 72 was the opportunity. That was a lot of revenue. And so I started with a strike team, an experiment. Don't lead the witness. Don't make it work. If it's going to work, it's going to work. So what could you, Alan, do if I was coaching you between now and our next session to put a little bit of fire behind this and see if that's an opportunity or not?
I know they teach that in coaching, to ask questions, lead people to the answers rather than tell them the answers. On the question that you ask about who are your adversaries, how do you advise people, or what sort of questions you help them with? Once they identify those adversaries, what are different ways to navigate those adversaries or succeed with adversaries? And almost everyone's had adversaries at work outside of academic careers where everybody gets along. But
yeah, of course.
But yeah, what's some common advice that you give people once they've identified their adversaries, how to navigate those adversaries?
Yeah, first, how important is that adversary, right, to your success? Scale of 1 to 10, they say 1. Think, fine, okay, let them be an average. 10, okay. What do you think? What's important to them? What's driving this in your relationship? Do you think? Typically, what I find out, people make assumptions about people without ever actually doing the due diligence. So I'd say keep your friends close, your enemies closer, kind of a thing. Spend some time with them. Ask the tough question. I notice in some of these meetings, it doesn't seem like we get along. I know I sent you that email 3 days ago. I never heard back. I know that's not your style. First of all, I want to make sure. Did you receive my email? Yes. Okay. Soon. Okay. Correct. Because a lot of times we think, oh, they didn't call me back. And they say, I called you back last night. And I look on my phone and it's in there because the phone technology is not perfect. So yeah. Alleviate that. How important are they to you? What's important to them? And if they are really important to your success and success is your goal, then figure out where you have common ground. And typically it can be what's important to them for their career goals. And if this relationship helps them accomplish their goals, they are not an adversary anymore.
You lift them up, and whether they compliment you or not, they will appreciate at least that you've supported them. They will probably trounce on you less.
Yeah. And what's their goal? Knowing other people's goals, by the way, your clients as well, besides this relationship we have, they want to get promoted. Do they want to move to France? Do they want to do this and that? And there might be somebody there. Oh, wow. My buddy just moved over there. Oh, you want to move into that group? I know that leader. You want to meet him?
Yeah. It's so important to be thinking, put yourself in the other person's shoes, whether it's someone that you're trying to work with at work, when you're interviewing. Thinking about what that interviewer is looking for and what's important to them and meeting them where their needs are. And really, I don't know if it's empathetic thinking or just really putting yourself in someone else's shoes and head of what's important to them.
Yeah.
And sometimes you can ask it. Sometimes you can ask it and say, hey, what are your goals? And sometimes people will tell you. And sometimes it's a little bit harder to tear that thread. We are running low on time, so I do want to make sure that we have time for the last two questions that we always ask here on the podcast. One, like you've shared lots of sick advice, and I appreciate that. If you're kind enough to leave our listeners with one more piece of sick career advice that they can start using, implementing, thinking about, what's another golden nugget from your years of experience?
Be an owner. Mm-hmm. Don't be a victim.
Love that. Former manager was someone I think we both know, Ben Sates, talked about that a lot. Jocko Willink's book, Extreme Ownership, that one's a little bit extreme as a former Navy SEAL, but I learned a lot from that book and that mentality. Own it. There's always something you can do and don't blame others. And then finally, how can people find you, reach out to you, support you, and so forth?
I try to make that easy. And certainly at jaybirdunlimited.com, right? All one word, a little bit long, but I'm there and certainly findable
there.
And it's
J-A-Y-B-I-R-D. Not the letter J, but J-A-Y-B-I-R-D.
Thank you. Exactly. And then LinkedIn, Jay Bowden, B-O-W-D-E-N. And my site and all that information is linked in there. And really, those are the two primary ways. I'm starting to do a little bit more. I love the opportunity you gave me today. Thank you so much, Alan. I appreciate you spending this time with me and feeling like I could add value to your viewership and your listenership. But those are the two easiest ways to find me.
Awesome, Jay.
As I said, through LinkedIn and through the companies that I've worked for, the relationships that I've built, we are fortunate to get to know really good people. Take the smart out and all those other things that they are. They're good people. And when I was down, and to your point, 16 years, it ended with a layoff, so that everybody knows that was January 20th a year ago. And fast forward to today, that was basically my opportunity to do what I love doing the most, as I said, with that color coordination in my calendar.
Thank you so much for the time, Jay. I learned a lot about dealing with adversaries. I love your concept of stay and go, to have that two-part strategy. I really look forward to continuing our conversations in the future. Thank you so much for joining us on the Sick Career Podcast, Jay.
That wraps up another remarkable episode of the Sick Career Podcast with Alan Stein. Check out past episodes and other resources on the website. That's sickpodcast.com, and it's S-Y-C-K. Alan, tell the audience about the newsletter they can sign up for.
The newsletter rocks. Check out the accelerator, XLR8R. You will get great tips about your career. You will get honest insights. You will get the occasional pet picture. And you will learn how to take proactive control and take charge of your career.
Very good. Very good. That's sickpodcast.com, S-Y-C-K. For your host, Alan Stein, I'm Russ Reba. And we hope you've enjoyed today's episode. You are going to love the next one.